Welcome everyone to the V Book Club podcast. This is a podcast by the makers of V Magazine and V Speaks. I'm Jordan Staggs, your host and the editor of V Magazine. And I'm here today with Arlen J. Staggs, who is my uncle and an author. And we're going to talk about all things writing and the publishing process. So yeah. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Thanks for being here. Happy to be here. I was thinking on the way over here, you're either dumb, which I know you're not, or you're incredibly brave for having your uncle on the podcast, and not just any uncle, like your uncle that's a little bit crazy. So
yeah, the fun uncle.
The fun uncle.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think this is going to be great.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I'm so excited because I think all growing up, I didn't even know that you liked to write, or, you know, I knew that you did theater and we had that in common. And I think we, you know, sort of hadn't talked much for a while when you moved to California and now you're back. Yeah. And so it's exciting to have you here in Florida with us. But I want to talk about, how'd you get into writing and what makes you want to write?
Well, I think the dirty little secret that I carry is this. But, you know, like most writers, when you talk to them, they're like, oh, I was 6 months old and I wrote my first sentence and I've always been a writer. And that's not true for me. I don't think I got into it until I went to law school. Mm-hmm. And that's where I learned to write. And I didn't realize I was learning to write, but that's what was happening. And then I kind of transitioned my career from practicing law to working in advertising as a copywriter. Mm-hmm. And that's really kind of where my love for storytelling took off.
Yeah.
So I haven't always been a writer, really. Uh-huh. Or I didn't think of myself as one.
I was gonna say, were you kind of one in your head though?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Well, I think I kind of feel like we all are. Like, yeah. I feel like storytelling is just what we do. Mm-hmm.
I think as humans, that's something that we've always done. Probably, yeah, one of the oldest crafts, you know, going back to people just sitting around the fire, like, right, telling, right, stories. So why do you, yeah, think that's so important to us as people?
Well, it's an interesting question because I think it's one of those things that just happens without us meaning to. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you're constantly telling stories, whether you're even telling stories to yourself in your head or telling stories to other people. It's just how we, it's just, for me, it's something I can't not do. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something that we all have, and you're either practicing that craft, like you said, or you're not. And I think, but I think it's in there. I think it's in everybody.
Yeah. Sometimes even when you're not practicing it,
yeah,
that makes you even more of a writer. Right. I think, but for me, it's different because I have books that I made when I was 6, and yeah, I'm like writing jokes and writing little stories in construction
and your spaghetti
paper.
Poem.
And my spaghetti poem, which I'm not going to repeat again. If you want to hear that, you have to listen to season one of the V Speaks podcast.
Right.
But I think that it's just interesting to me that you came about it differently. So,
yeah,
how did you go from doing the advertising part of the storytelling, which can be very creative,
yeah,
to, you know, now you're working on a novel?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question. So I think I'll even go back to when I was practicing law. I really was not happy in that profession. I loved law school. And I think what I loved about law school was the writing and the crafting, the arguments, and you know, putting them together in a cohesive kind of story, essentially. Mm-hmm. And then when I started practicing law, it wasn't the same. It was clients and stuff I didn't like to do. It was a lot of emotion that I didn't like feeling or having to deal with. But I had a friend who worked in an advertising agency as a graphic designer. And mm-hmm, I don't remember how it happened, but I edited one of their magazine ads one day. He put it in front of me. I rewrote the headline, rewrote like the body copy or whatever. Mm-hmm. This was back when we did things in print, you know, back in the
Hey,
old
we
days.
Do things in print.
That's right.
Here.
That's right.
I do that every day. Exactly what you're saying.
Right.
So.
That agency was like, who is this guy? Like, uh-huh, who rewrote this ad? And they were really impressed with it.
This is the best ad we've ever seen.
I know. Right. This is wonderful. And I ended up working for that, uh-huh, ad agency. So what I did is I found myself with like this moonlighting job that part-time I was helping out this ad agency and then going to practice law during the day. One, mm-hmm, job I hated, one job I loved.
Okay.
So finally I was like, wow, I'm going to go and be a writer. And then I think how I transitioned from being a copywriter to working on the novel that I'm at the final stages in, finally, is a lot less sexy. I just one day was like in a bar with my husband and we were talking about our future. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about like goals. It was Christmas. We're talking about goals for the coming year and our life. And I said, you know, one day when I retire, I'm going to write the novel. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, you're going to do that now.
Okay.
And this was 7 years ago. And so that's what I did. And so for better or for worse, I quit my job, started writing, and quickly learned that copywriting and novel writing are two completely different things. So I had no idea what I was doing.
Yeah.
And had to kind of learn what a novel is. And I'd read lots of novels, but I didn't know what the craft was.
So how did you decide like what your novel was going to be? Where did that idea come from?
Oh gosh. There is a moment. So I'm reluctant to answer this question because my mother, your grandmother, thinks this novel is about her. It's not about
this
her.
Is, this so. Podcast is going to help explain things.
Mom, it's not about you. No, but I've told her several times, you know, this is it isn't about her. However, the novel grew out of this moment that is a true story that my parents used to tell. And it's this story about when they were teaching across the hall from one another. And my dad, who was a kind of a jokester, really funny kind of guy, constantly playing tricks and telling jokes. And he was like the football coach at the high school. And my mom was in her classroom teaching and she heard like this ruckus across the hall. And she ran across the hall and looked in his room and he was like up on his desk wearing a wig, essentially leading a pep rally in like first period or whatever. And I don't think that was the moment they met, but in the story I was like, wow, wouldn't that be a cool kind of meet cute for a romantic comedy? And the story just kind of grew out of that. And so I do have the main character is a teacher. She's in a love triangle with her fiance, who is running for mayor in a small town in Alabama. And then she goes across the hall and hears the football coach leading this pep rally in his classroom. And that's kind of like the moment where she falls in love with him and resists it. And, you know, so the story kind of grew out of that moment. And that scene is in the book. And I don't know, everything just kind of came from there. And that's really the only moment that comes from a biographical, I guess, moment.
I think that's my favorite moment in the book, actually. And I didn't even know that that was kind of like the true story and the inspiration for it. It's just so funny and cute. And I was like, yeah, I can see that. Like that, I can see Dedekind doing that. Yeah. Like that's it. But so, you know, this, it's set in this small town in Alabama, which, you know, we grew up in a small town in Alabama. There are some similarities and some names of places that, you know, might evoke that for people that know them. But what made you want to sort of throw those little, like, I want to call them Easter eggs in there?
Easter eggs, you mean like?
Like for people that grew up like Florence, Alabama, you would recognize some of these things.
I just thought it would be fun. I thought it would be funny. You know, the name of the town is Bailey Springs, which is like a, as you know, it's like a little area that's not incorporated or anything, but it's like a, if you grew up in Florence, you know where Bailey Springs is. And so that's the name of the hometown. And I just thought it would be fun to, you know, we're so connected to the river, the Tennessee River and Shoals Creek. And so if you dig deeper into the book, you'll notice that all of like the teams that they play and the locations are all places along the Tennessee River. So I actually pulled out the map and I was like, oh, like, Brush Creek is one place and Pickwick Lake. And so I pulled out all of these. I feel a connection to that river because it's just, you know, growing up there, it's,
it's part of you. Like even if you don't even go there a lot, it's, I don't know. Like you said, it's so ingrained in the town and the culture and the history of the area.
And I guess less metaphorically and more just like practically when I was writing the book, if I needed a name, it was just like, oh, I'll just, it was just easy to think of a place that's like down the street from where I grew up and, you know, throw it in there. So.
Who would you say was your favorite character to write in the book?
Lita Pearl, for sure.
Okay. Tell us more about Lita Pearl.
Yeah. Well, she has a point of view in the book. She is, so the main character in the book is Trudy, the teacher who's in the love triangle. And Lita Pearl is her mother, who is, you know, hellbent on her marrying this guy that's running for mayor and is probably going to be the mayor because she would love nothing more than to be the mother of the first lady of Bailey Springs. But she makes these magical biscuits that make men fall in love with women. And she's been feeding them to Haskell, who's the guy that's running for mayor. And then she accidentally feeds one to Coach Meacham. And so now both the men that Trudy's in the love triangle with have eaten the biscuit. But she's just kind of, to me, I'll tell you who she is, from my life. She's a conglomeration of my grandmother and then all of her sisters. So my grandmother had a bunch of sisters. And they all had these very distinct personalities. And they were all, in their own way, just hilarious. And so I when I wrote Lita Pearl, I remembered things that I heard them say. And I just kind of threw them all in there. And so it's she's literally a composite character of all of my crazy great aunts.
Yeah. And a lot of different people. And I think when you read Lita Pearl, you know her. If you grew up in Alabama or a small town in the South at all, you know her.
Yes,
like she
for sure.
is all of those ladies.
Yeah.
So it was just really fun.
When I talk about her, I always remember this one line she has in the book, which is, what are you talking about? I can't tell the people of Highland Baptist Church the truth. She's very, she's very, there's an irony to her that's so Southern and so true to where we're from.
Yeah. Did you always think that you would write a Southern novel? Do you consider it that?
I do consider it that for sure. Yeah. Yes and no. One of the things that I tried to shy away from, and I don't know that I did a great job doing this, but I tried to shy away from just that old, what we think of as a Southern novel. Mm-hmm. So just the kind of hee-haw, y'all come kind of, what we come to expect from stories about Southern people. I tried to elevate it a little bit, or not elevate it, this is not the right word, but contemporize it a little bit more.
And it's set, so it's set in the 80s, though.
Yeah.
But it wasn't always set in the
80s.
No. And I know you've been through many drafts, so I want to talk a little bit about that process and what made you decide to change the settings.
Yeah, that's a great question. So it was originally set in 1968, and I picked that year because that's the year that the moment happened where my mom walked across the hall and saw my dad doing the pep rally. So I was like, oh, it's 1968, I'm going to write a novel in 1968 without thinking about all the baggage that year in particular carried with it. And of course I was writing this 7 years ago. So it was in the height of kind of this racial conversation that we're having. I just got some feedback from an agent actually in my master's program that I was in, who just asked me, why are you writing in 1968? And I told her, that's when this particular scene happened. And she said, well, if you don't have a real reason to write from one of the most contentious years in American history, why do that? And so I moved it to the 80s and it made it a lot easier.
Yeah.
And then it also kind of, there's this kind of subplot, which is two boys that are in love with one another. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to give anything away in the book, but Trudy discovers these two boys in love with one another in the 80s. And it just made more sense. It allowed me to kind of tell my story a little bit more and kind of give my personal point of view a little more authenticity.
Yeah.
And so that it was a great transit. Once I moved it from the 60s to the 80s, it really became a lot easier to write.
Okay.
So
did you have to take certain scenes and literally just change them up a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that big of a transition. fortunately, I don't think the South changed very much between 1968 and 1982. Which is part of the charm of the South, too, is the people still talk the same and they still have the same traditions. And so it wasn't that big of a change. What was a lot of fun is when I did the research, I was at least old enough in 1982 that I could be like, oh yeah, I remember that. I remember the movie E.T. because that was like the number one movie in 82. And so it made the research a little more fun because it was a little more nostalgic for me rather than me learning something that I wasn't alive for. Mm-hmm.
I think the 80s are having a big moment right now anyways, so it's great and timely. And I think that it's fun. And this is a book, like, I read it and I loved it, and I want to see it as a series. Yeah. Like, I want a Netflix series because...
Wouldn't that be great?
Even, like, you know, all the cheerleaders, like, they kind of have their little subplot going on, and there could be a lot of drama going on there that would be really fun to see, so... I don't know. Or is that something that you
I would love that. Are interested in? Yeah, definitely. Let's do it. I'll tell you what I saw as I was writing it. I saw it more as a Broadway show.
That would be fun too. Yeah, for sure.
I just, you know, I don't know. If Casey Musgraves is a listener or a viewer of your podcast, she should write the...
Oh, she would be perfect.
Oh, she'd be great.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my... Okay. If I could wave a magic wand, it would be like,
okay, well, Casey, we're gonna send let's this do to this. Yeah, that would be so cool. So yeah. who would play Trudy?
Oh, I don't know. It's
in a show or I don't know. I have to think about that.
I kind of like Reese, but I don't know. Has she aged out of Trudy's role? She still looks so young. But
yeah.
Maybe. That's a terrible thing to say about Reese with
but Trudy's supposed to be like 24 or something. You know, she's young. This is her first teaching job, so yeah, I don't know. We'll get back to y'all on the casting decisions. You know, I want to talk a little bit about the publishing process because you've completed your draft and you're chopping it around with agents, you know, hoping to land a publisher. So how does that work? Because I know we have listeners that are writing and they want to know, how do I do this? It's very daunting.
Yeah, it is very daunting, and it's a great question, and it's a question that a lot of writers have. And I also think, unfortunately, it's a question that keeps a lot of writers from going forward and pursuing being published. So I tell people that literary agency works a lot like real estate agency in the sense that, you know, you're seeking an agent to kind of represent you to go and sell your book to a publisher. Mm-hmm. The only difference is in real estate agents chase their clients. And in literary agency, we writers are chasing the agents, begging them to be our agent, essentially. But, you know, also kind of trying to find the one that's in love with your book that can truly sell it, that you have a good relationship with. And so it's a complicated process. And it starts with the infamous query letter. So you basically write a sales pitch or a query asking these agents to be your agent. And so you kind of pitch the book to them and tell them a little bit what it's about. And that's the process that I'm in right now. And, you know, mostly agents get back to you and they say, if they get back to you, they get back to you and they say, I'm not interested. I've had three agents who've requested the full manuscript. So they're currently reading the manuscript right now with the idea that they'll get back to me and either say, no thanks, I'm good, or... they might get back with some changes. And so like, if you think about selling your house, an agent might come in and be like, can't wait to sell your house. Here's what we're going to need to do to get the most money. We're going to need to paint the living room. We're going to need to move all the dining room furniture out and restage it, whatever. They may have some certain changes. So I have one agent who has come back and said, you know, the first 50 pages were a little slow for me. If we could speed those up, that'd be great. Mm-hmm. So I'm now working on how can we get the character to this moment, which happens to be that scene where she walks into the pep rally. How do we get there faster? Does that answer your question? Is it?
Yeah.
I
think so. But also just how do you find these people? Like, you know, you're sending out the query letter. Like,
also a great question. So there's a couple of places where one place that I've started is books that I love and more specifically books that I think are similar to mine, books that will be in kind of the same genre, or writers that whose voice sounds like mine. And just going to the back of the book and seeing where the authors acknowledge their, you know, in the acknowledgments, they'll acknowledge their agent. And then you can go online. I mean, these days you can just go to Google and be like, who's the agent for, Kevin Wilson or whatever, mm-hmm. and it will come up. There's also some subscriptions, websites that you can subscribe to. So there's one called Query Tracker or Query Manager. It's like $25 for a year, I think. And it gives you a lot of information. So it will tell you, you can search by author or you can search by agent. You can see who they represent, mm-hmm. what agency they work with. And then it will have whether or not they're accepting queries.
Okay.
And if they are accepting queries, you know, kind of what they want. Sometimes mm-hmm. there's a form for you to fill out. It's not just an email. Mm-hmm. But then you go to work perfecting your query letter, which is an art in itself, really. Yeah.
Like sending out a cover letter.
Yeah.
Like, what can I say to really get this point across and find the person that believes in you? Mm-hmm. I mean, so that's...
Yeah.
A very, I feel like, special, intimate relationship that you're looking for, which is...
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And I think it's important that they love the book.
Yeah. You know? So when you were finding these agents that you were thinking about working with, and you said, you know, you wanted to look at some of your favorite authors and some that you think your style is similar to, who are a couple of those?
Well, I mentioned Kevin Wilson.
Uh-huh.
He's one, only because he writes... He's a master of that thing that I was talking about, where he writes these what I would consider Southern novels mm-hmm. that are more of a contemporary voice.
Uh-huh.
And he's just hilarious. Like I laugh through his books, and he has kind of that quirky, magical realism, I guess, where the kids catch on fire and his nothing to see here, which I equate to the magical biscuit. So that's an example of like a writer that. I mean, I would love to write like Kevin Wilson, mm-hmm. so let's, and, you know, he's an inspiration for me, so let's hit his agent up, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
How do you take, like you said, sort of the traditional Southern and blend it with, like, a contemporary voice? What makes it more contemporary to you?
Gosh, I think what I've tried to do is I've tried to juxtapose kind of Lita Pearl's, because Lita Pearl is kind of that, you could find her in she's more of a caricature of the South, mm-hmm. I would say.
Yeah.
Kind of what people come to expect of the traditional Southern funny character.
Yeah.
And I've tried to juxtapose her with Trudy's voice, which is a more, what you would expect a 24-year-old girl to speak like in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So that's how I did it. So I think Lita Pearl's there to remind us of the time that we're in and the place that we're in. I also think setting is a way to do that. So there's something about, for me anyway, when I read, if I know, like Kevin Wilson, for example, if I know I'm in Franklin, Tennessee, and he's telling this story, I instantly hear the characters speak as if they're mm-hmm. in Tennessee.
Right.
And so I don't know if that's true for everybody. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, it was for me when I was reading your book. And I think that does make sense because you read certain things and you're like, oh, well, I read a lot of fantasy. I imagine like a British accent, basically, you know, or these kind of like high fantasy accents that you would hear. I think that does make sense.
Yeah. And I think also it's like the food that they eat,
uh-huh.
the drinks that they order.
Yeah.
You know, there's things that you can throw in there that are like Southern.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then how did you decide... Because, you know, like as a male writer with a female lead, like how was that? Like, just tell me how that happened.
That is a great question. I don't know.
And
I
if you had to think about it, like, okay, no, I'm thinking about this from Trudy's perspective.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I don't know. I don't know that I have a good answer.
For that. You're just like, we're like, no, I just want this to be her story. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, I kind of, one of the questions that's been lingering in my mind is, you know, there's the two boys. I can't say the names mm-hmm. because if you read the book, you're the surprise.
No,
there's the two boys that are in love with one another. And one of them I feel like is more my voice.
Mm-hmm.
And so I toyed with like, why is he not the main character?
Uh-huh.
And then also Lita Pearl, I think is my favorite character. So I was like, well, why is she not the main character? And so I kind of, that's a little bit of a tension that I have in my own mind.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I didn't find a challenge getting in Trudy's head mm-hmm. and speaking her voice. I will say this. I am in a writing group that's all women.
Okay.
So it's actually a read and critique group. So every week we turn in 25 pages and the whole group critiques the work. And having those women read the book has been great because sometimes I'm way off and they're like, mm-hmm. no, a woman would never say okay. that or think that
yeah. so
or
you
do
had,
that.
So you did yeah, have some yeah, yeah. feedback
I did have that. That's my okay. answer. We can.
Yeah. No, I was curious about that. I was like, oh, how did you decide?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And Lita Pearl, you do get her point of view in some chapters. So that's good
yes.
too.
And I also, just Trudy as a mom, mm-hmm. That's the other thing that just, I have no, I'll never have any personal connection right. to what it means to be a mom or what it feels like to be a mom. But these women who are amazing writers in their own right, mm-hmm. Have really been instrumental in being like, no, a mother would lose her mind over this, or a mother would yeah. absolutely not do that. And so that's been good.
That makes sense.
And I think that speaks to the importance of just having other people read your work, mm-hmm. even when it's not ready. Mm-hmm. You know, because you can go down some paths that you don't need to go down or that are not useful if you're not getting feedback.
Yeah. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And I think I want to close this out because I ask everyone the same question, yeah. you know, at some point during the podcast, and that's, what is your favorite book?
Oh.
And why does it yeah. mean something to you?
Yeah. So my favorite book, I think, I mean, it's hard to name just one, right? Mm-hmm. But I always come back to The Art of Fielding okay. by Chad Harbach. I love that book. And I think for me, I think every man should read the book. First of all, it's a very, it's about baseball, but it's also about just what is it to be a man in today's society? And, mm-hmm. And then there's also this excellent female's POV that kind of gives the female perspective. I don't know. It's just, it's such a robust story. Mm-hmm. And I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to check that one out for
yeah.
sure. And we're also going to tell everyone to check out Lita Pearl's Love Biscuits or whatever
yeah,
the final title
right.
ends up being. Is
yeah.
that gonna? Is that it? Like,
well,
you think
every,
you might change it?
I mean, every agent that I've talked to has loved the title.
Okay.
So Lita Pearl's Love Biscuits, that's
yeah.
right now, that's it. I don't know.
Coming
we'll
soon.
See. Coming soon. Yeah. And any agent out there that is
yeah.
interested, hit me up.
Well, this book has something for everyone. And I'm yeah. not just saying that because I'm related to you and I'm excited about it. Like, you've got the drama, you've got the sports, you've got
yeah.
like the Southern humor in the fiction, and it's so funny and just kind of cute too. So I hope everyone will check it out.
Awesome.
And thank you so much for being here on the podcast.
Thank you. It's been great.
All right. Thanks, everyone. See you next time.